Season's greetings to all from the Dogs. We are the Dogs, the Defence of Government Schools program, and we are here every week to defend and promote public education. And it's been a busy year this year with the Victorian government doubling down on their shortchanging public schools and teachers. We want to keep the pressure on. It might be the holidays, but the struggle never sleeps. So we're revisiting the rally outside the offices of Anthony Carbine last October, where many teachers and school communities asked the question, where is the money? Let's bring the rally to the radio.
So one of the reasons this rally has been called is because Victorian public schools are the lowest funded schools in Australia, and the Victorian Premier Jacinda Allen has consistently walked away, straight out failed to fulfil the promises she and previous state governments have made to address this.
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an ES from Diamond Valley STS.
Thanks, Liz. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about why you're here today?
We're protesting for better pay and better work conditions and more funding for the schools.
So we've heard today that the Victorian public schools are the lowest funded schools in Australia. Also, this funding delay of $2.4 billion from public schools announced by Jacinda Allen is essentially going to make this problem even worse. Can you tell us a little bit about how this might actually badly affect public schools?
It is going to affect our students at our school, a lot of our parents. Parents are struggling, we're struggling with staff, we're needing staff to help with our kids who have got really high needs. So having lower funding is actually detriment to their education. We've got small classes, but we're going to have smaller because of staffing. If we can have more staffing, we can actually have more students come into the school and being taken care of daily.
At the school you work at, Diamond Valley, does have higher needs. What are some of the challenges for the workers at the school that this lack of funding has created and will exacerbate?
So we have a lot of behavioural challenges in our school, a lot of students with high special needs, medical needs. So low funding doesn't allow us to have the proper adequate staffing to be able to support with the behaviour, with the medical needs for our students. So a lot of times, if the staffing's not there, we're having to call parents, and some of the kids can't be at school because we don't have the staff to deal with their needs. So if we have more funding for the school, we'll be able to get more staff in to actually allow our students to be in school, learn and have a voice. I love public school, and I went through the public system. I love my education that I got, and I just think, as I said, the more funding we can get for our students, they're going to get a great public education.
So teachers, members of the public, students, parents and the union are absolutely outraged that when the Premier Jacinda Allen promised to fully fund public schools in Victoria, quite duplicitously, she did not mention that any of the promised funding would not be passed until 2031, which is essentially taking $2.4 billion of funding from our schools. This is absolutely unacceptable. Funding that is delayed, particularly for so long, is funding that has been denied. Students and teachers cannot simply go back in time and reap the benefits of that funding. You can't graduate from an underfunded school program and then 3 or 4 years later go back to reap the benefits. Absolutely disgraceful. There's also no guarantee that any of the proposed funding will actually ever come, considering that whenever there is a change of government, the goalposts seem to move, and the most at risk, the most disadvantaged, particularly children coming from areas that are working class areas, disproportionately disadvantaged here. Yeah, they have the least resourced schools, and any hope of acquiring an equitable education is denied to these students.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, name and what school you're at, please.
Daryl Croke, I'm at Glenroy College.
How long have you been teaching, Daryl?
18 years.
And what do you think of the fact that Victorian schools are the lowest funded in Australia?
Oh, it's atrocious. It's really bad. You can't justify it at any level. It's not good enough.
How have you experienced it in the classroom, the fact that schools aren't fully funded?
We can't get to the kids we need to get to help them, give them the support that they need. We don't have time really to assess them properly, give them feedback properly. So that's the issue here, and it's a matter of where you spend the money in society. Money's not being spent where it should be spent.
Do you have kids with special needs, and how are they coping?
Yeah, more than most schools we do, and we do our best to look after them, but our resources are stretched. Not only resources are stretched, but we've actually recently been cut $360,000 in funding, so the government cut the tutor program. The tutor program was designed to help kids who have particularly low literacy and numeracy. We had free teachers lined up to do that, and the money's been cut. Not only is that, but there's been a cutting of funding of $1.2 million in other schools in our area.
What do you think about the fact that private schools get more funding per student than government schools?
Yeah, that's another outrage. I mean, what's happening at the moment is rather than funding public education, the government is basically just funding middle-class aspiration. And they figured out that that's what they need to do. And it's divisive. It divides the community between those parents who send their kids to private schools and those parents who send their kids to public schools. I just think the money that should be going in the private school is a simple number. That number is zero.
What do you think about young teachers and how they're coping? Because on average, they don't stay for as long as a lot of us oldies used to.
No, look, and things have got worse in the last 3 years. So since COVID, and everyone's saying the same thing, because it's not just me saying it, but it's becoming harder to teach, and the resources haven't been held up to actually make that job easier. There's more demands being put on teachers, so it's a perfect storm of more expectation and less resources. So a lot of younger teachers are struggling, and then they're either not making it through their placements or they're leaving soon after.
Anthony Carbines is in Parliament announcing, along with his colleagues, some pretty ordinary laws when it comes to young people and youth justice. We don't jail young people, we educate young people. Last time I checked, that's exactly what we do. But he's down in Parliament, so he couldn't hear you. So I want you to be really loud. What do we want?
My name is Justine McDessie and I'm the Wellbeing Coordinator at the Pavilion School in Preston.
Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of school that is?
The Pavilion School is a specialist secondary setting for young people who've been excluded from mainstream education for a whole range of reasons, but usually due to social disadvantage, trauma, that sort of thing. And we work from a wellbeing model where we prioritise a high staff-to-student ratio in student wellbeing and smaller class numbers, adjusted timetables. We make lots of modifications to suit the needs of our students. We have a really high level of neurodiversity as well, and other presentations that require specialist interventions.
So how is this lack of funding affecting your school?
It's having a direct and immediate impact at our school. We've lost 20% of our staff in the last 6 months, including to wellbeing workers, and our wellbeing workers are class-based. they have a caseload of 25 students. So at present, we have two classes without the wellbeing support that they need. The other part of it that's so deplorable is that many of our students are disability and inclusion funded, and those funds are not being protected and following those students. So the interventions that we are saying that we offer, that we need to be able to offer in order for our school to function, are not being funded.
Why are the funds not protected, or what does that actually mean, that they've been allocated it but they don't actually get it?
That's right. So there's nothing in policy or practice to say that the funding absolutely must follow the student. We have a 50% cohort of First Nations students as well, so it's especially unjust. We belong to a greater P-12 college, and the funds can be used across the college, and that's not something that we as specialists or staff have control over.
You mentioned that you have two classes without wellbeing workers. So what's happening to those classes and those students?
The reality on the ground is that young people begin to disengage. And the engagement that we have built with them is built over years. We build really deep, trusting relationships. We build rapport with their families. We build regard across the community. And that gets ruptured when they don't have the consistency that they need, when they don't have a familiar face and a predictable environment and somebody that they trust. Even though we have a small staff cohort and we could internally cover some of the shortages, having a revolving door of staff has a really detrimental impact on the young people, and they've expressed as much. So we're seeing disengagement.
More stressful situations for the teachers.
Absolutely. That's the other part of it. It's actually an occupational risk. A lot of the behaviours are big behaviours, and we work from a place of non-judgment, but those behaviours become more and more difficult to manage the less personnel you have on the ground. And the suggestion that we should just be able to cover it internally is insulting and a total misunderstanding of the work that we do and the nuance that it requires.
So you also mentioned 25 per wellbeing worker, but 25 to me sounds like a big number for working with kids that have got special needs.
Yeah, look, there's another perspective that we're overstaffed and that wellbeing workers should actually be working with a caseload of 50 students.
So, each?
Yes, that's correct. All other specialist services that we work with, that work with the same cohort, never have a caseload of more than 6 young people. So we are already working at the limits of what is possible. We are already stretching the resources that don't go very far at all. As I said, one of our core focuses is wellbeing, but we also have a pathways program and a Koori support program. One of the positions that hasn't been replaced is a Koori support worker. So we have one woman, Ashley Luttrell, who I just want to shout out. She is incredible, but she supports 88 young people and their families on her own. The failure to replace that role in particular is having a huge impact on the Koori community. It's an identified role, and we were hopeful that a man could occupy that position so that the young people have access to men's and women's business as is culturally appropriate for them. Ash is working double time to be able to hold it all together for all of our families, and the cultural overwhelm is real. I worry about staff burning out. I think what we're expecting of professionals is not just unrealistic, it's unfair. It's also a gendered burden that we place on a majority non-male workforce to expect people to just pick up the extras and make sense of this funding mess. So wellbeing programs have also been impacted. As I said, I'm the wellbeing coordinator. My budget's been slashed by 75%.
That's outrageous.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to operate on a shoestring. I can't bring in the specialised professionals that are needed for our students to get the therapeutic care that they need. So I'm having to lean on community relationships and ask people to offer us services at huge discounts, which again is unfair. It's sort of just like the injustice of it just keeps being passed on and requires a lot of goodwill, and that's a recipe for disaster.
A leading question. If I was in your shoes, I'd be out in the streets striking today. What do you think?
I think just the same. I'm ready to strike. My colleagues are ready to strike. Bring it on.
Now it's time for a quick break. You're listening to The Dogs on 3CR Community Radio.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
Welcome back to the Dogs program, and now we're going back to the rally.
Welcome here. We're here today to rally for school funding.
Yay!
We need Carbines and his staff to hear us very loudly and clearly. We need the message to go back to Premier Allan. What do we want?
Full funding!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Full funding!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Full funding!
When do we want it?
So listeners, now we're joined by Tara. Tara, would you like to introduce yourself quickly?
Hi, my name's Tara Burnett. I'm a rank and file unionist in the AAU, public school teacher, and a former candidate on a platform of full justice and funding in public education.
Thanks for joining us, Tara. I'm just wondering if you could speak a bit to the general situation here where public schools in Victoria are the least funded schools in Australia, in particular to the conditions this makes for workers in terms of class sizes, what this means for teacher pay, and what it also means for student outcome.
Absolutely, because Victoria, it's not just the worst funded public schools in the country, it's also the lowest paid public school teachers in the country. And the thing is that there was supposed to be promises made so many times over to bring things up to scratch. In fact, even just recently, at the start of this year, we had the federal Labor government say we're going to get everyone to full funding, admittedly by 2034, but it's finally a commitment that they've made for the first time since the early 10s, and state Labor said, yep, we're going to match that. And then as soon as the election was over, like within less than a month, they went back on that promise and they're like, oh, we actually can't afford that. We're too busy giving these handouts to big business and pay rises elsewhere.
It's been pointed out funding delayed is actually funding denied. So can you talk a bit about how actually the delay of this funding is just going to exacerbate the situation for public school and public school workers in Victoria?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is schools aren't able to plan, schools aren't able to budget properly for things that they've got coming up. It's hard to make sure they've got enough staff for how many students are coming in. Thanks.
We've got a lot of support from cars for listeners.
Beautiful to see. So we've got a lot of support from the community who do want to see better funding, who do want to see a lot more support for public education and for teachers, because schools are having to turn students away, schools are having to leave important purchases unmade, schools are having to not hire enough people to cover classes, and that's in the face of an already existing teacher shortage, particularly regional areas, because imagine if you work in Wodonga, all you need to do is go across the river and you're immediately getting at least $13,000, often much more, dollars pay rise. So it's making it really difficult for schools across Victoria.
Where do you think responsibility lays for actually addressing this? And if no action is taken to amend this, what action is the union planning?
It lies with the Labor Party. They are in power at both the state and the federal level, right? They have had so much opportunity to do something about this. They have promised so many times to do something about this. And every single one of those promises, they have gone back on and broken. It's very clear that particularly here in Victoria, they take public school teachers, public school students, parents of public school students and the communities around them completely for granted. And it's not good enough and it's not sustainable, right? They need to wake up and stop taking us for granted. We're in negotiations at the moment for better conditions for staff and for workers in public schools, but if we don't see those conditions improve, we may need to take a protected act and ballot order and may need to democratically decide as workers to take some level of industrial action.
Hey, Anthony Carbines, ooh, ha,
So it's quite a lively scene here out the front of Anthony Carbine's office. We have about 100 teachers, union members, parents and general community members here protesting against the $2.4 billion delayed funding and the general underfunding of public schools in Victoria. People are holding signs demanding that Jacinta Allen fix the funding. We have signs demanding public funds for public schools. There are AEU flags, big bright red shirts everywhere. It's quite striking scenes here.
Folks, I'm going to be pretty quick because the issue is pretty clear. You shouldn't have to be here today after a long week, after a long term, after a long year. We're turning up because the government's decided not to show up. We're turning up and we're not asking for all the extras. We're not asking for all the big bucks. We're not asking for the rivers of gold. We're just asking for what every other public school in the country has. And what they have are funding deals that deliver additional resources that mean that you can get a decent pay increase. That means that you can have conditions to match. That means that you can have more colleagues, more teachers, more ES, more allied health. More ability to deliver on the needs of our students, and in a way that doesn't mean that every week, every AU member does 12 and a half hours on average, unpaid overtime. We have a system that runs on your goodwill. Yeah, it's only run this way for, I don't know, however many years, decades, all the time. But we've got a system that runs on your goodwill. We've got a system that runs on the fact that the state government has decided not to do the right thing. Yet they call this place, and they're pretty fond of it, they even put it on the number plate, they call this place the education state. How's that going, everybody? But I'll tell you what I don't want to tell you about. I don't want to tell you about what they did in 2023 when they decided not to deliver, even though they signed up an agreement in that year, they decided not to deliver $220 million to our schools. And just by the way, $220 million is equivalent to a 4% pay increase. Just saying. Just saying. I won't tell you what they did in 2024 when they didn't pass on $145 million. I won't tell you about that. And I certainly won't tell you what they did this year for money that should have been delivered. They should have delivered another $145 million this year. All in the context of agreements that they'd already stitched up. I won't tell you about those things because I do want to tell you about what they did this year. In January of this year, you had the Premier Jacinta Allen come out and say that she had agreed with the Prime Minister to deliver 100% of school funding to our schools. It was cause for celebration. Our union and the branches of the AU right around the country have been fighting for this for a long time. You've been fighting for this for a long time. And it's the case that she said that she was going to deliver. That was a good day. I tell you what though, what was abundantly clear not so long after is that she didn't actually tell the truth. She didn't come clean. She didn't actually tell you that in April of the year before, her government had already made a decision not to pass on any of the additional money until 2031. Can you wait 5 years, folks?
No!
I asked you, can you wait 5 years? No, we can't. We can't wait. Our students certainly can't wait. It's also the case that this year, that the Premier decided that it was a really good thing that we should have negotiations commence for the VGSA. That was a thing that kicked off in about July this year. We've been negotiating every couple of weeks, and we're now negotiating every week. And I just wanted to let you know, we're not making it very far. Because there is a direct connection to the fact that Victorian government schools are the lowest funded in the country, and the fact that Victorian teachers are the lowest paid. When you don't deliver the money, as I've said over the years that they haven't delivered the money, it's pretty clear that there's a problem when it comes to having the money for teacher pay. And it's not just about teachers, folks, is it? It's about ES, it's about our school leaders, it's about people being paid what they're worth for the high quality public education that you deliver every year. And it might be the case that there's a chance next year, if the government continues to drag their heels, if they continue to thumb their nose, if they continue to ignore us, that we do have to get out on the streets, that we do have to engage in an industrial campaign, and that we really need to make it clear in an election year what the government needs to do to support us, to deliver fair pay increases, improvements to work and conditions, but also to have the resources available that our students need. Yeah. Folks, you need to give yourselves another round of applause. Yeah. I said before you shouldn't have to be here, but thank you for turning out. Thank you for representing the folks in your schools. Thank you for caring.
Today we've got Heather from Heidelberg Primary, from the school just down the road. Heather is a HSR, health and safety rep at Heidelberg Primary. She is also a primary school state councillor. So I really want you to give Heather a really warm welcome, and Heather's going to give a bit of a speech.
Thank you, everyone. I'm here with my colleagues from Heidelberg Primary, and that I'm going to say is not going to be news to you guys. So we are here because we care about our school community. We're here because we care about our students. We're here because we care about our colleagues. So we've come here today for exactly the same reason that everyone else is here today, in this supposedly education state. A state where, unfortunately, we find that our students in our schools, the ones we see every day and we teach every day, are the lowest funded in the whole country.
Shame.
And with our colleagues who are amongst the lowest paid in the whole country.
Shame.
And I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, I felt that the only thing that should determine a fair education and a full funded education for every child was the fact that they lived in our country. Not the fact about what their circumstances were, not about what state they were living in, not what their postcode was. There should be full funding for every child because it's a right. We're not asking for a privilege, we're asking for a right. And every single day, we are finding in our schools that we are making impossible decisions, every one of us. We're finding that we're having to make decisions about, maybe in our classroom, is it that child that you teach every day that you know needs a bit of extra help, but hey, there's another kid that needs even more help. And so does that targeted help go to that other child? And then the one that doesn't need it quite so much, are they left for their gap just to get bigger and bigger? And that's what's happening to all of us. We're making impossible decisions. We're stretched with our ES. They're doing an amazing job. They're on the front line. But we don't have the funding that we need. We know what to do. It's not like it's difficult for us. We actually know what to do to make a difference. But to make that difference, we need the full funding. And we need that respect. I became a teacher because I really believe that there should be, no matter where the child comes from, there should be, it should be equitable. There should be full funding for everyone. I grew up in Scotland in the Thatcher years in a mining village. And the only pathway to opportunity was through a good education. And we should be providing that good education for every one of our children. Like I said, it's not a privilege. It's a right. Yeah. It shouldn't matter where they live. And how ironic that we're in the education state, how ironic that in the one country, just because you're in a different state, you might find that your child in a government school is the lowest funded in that country. And the other thing I can't believe as well is our parents don't actually realise that a lot of them are shocked, they're genuinely shocked when they find that out. And I wouldn't be surprised if down the line we find that it's not just teachers that are on the streets rallying. Yeah. Yeah. We might find that we've got our parents with us too. And so I think, you know, it's really great that we've all managed to get here today. I know it's really hard. We did CPR before we came here, you know? And now we're doing CPR again. You know? So that's all I'd like to say. I'm sure my story's no different from everyone else's.
A huge round of applause for Heather. Well done, Heather.
Means a lot as a teacher in the sector that we are not being met with our obligations. We've been given a promise that all of our students, all of our schools will be fully funded, which would make us in line with Gonski. The fact that it's been reneged on and not delivered in a timely fashion is really delaying the needs of our students and teachers. We need action now. And we need also, not only for our facilities, but also to retain our teachers. We need to be able to keep teachers in the profession and entice them, as well as, you know, improvement of those conditions. That's what this agreement's really about. And we need to actually get everyone behind it to support them.
Of course.
So underfunding often comes in a lot of various ways. Often we don't have education support teachers. In my area, I'm in the arts, I don't have any particular technicians, I don't have anyone to particularly help me with setting up the materials, ordering of materials, maintaining those materials, and that is another thing that adds to my workload. It also comes down to having, you know, aides to actually help, you know, students with IEPs and help their supporting needs. The funding model that goes into actually, you know, to get that support for those students is really convoluted at times. We need to have better systems and more funding around to help those students.
If government doesn't support public schools, what do we do?
Stand up for them!
If government doesn't support public schools, what do we do?
Stand up for them!
It's time for another short break here on the Dogs program. You're listening to 3CR. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
Welcome back to the Dogs program, and now back to the rally.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on your dial. We are in Heidelberg outside the office of Anthony Carbines, who is a state member for Ivanhoe District in Naarm. The AEU, Australian Education Union, has organised a rally here in regards to funding delays for public schools. The 2026 indicative budget has shown that Victorian public schools are and will remain the lowest funded in the country. There's actually no funding that's going to deliver staffing or support for students' learning and well-being. There's nothing being done to address the workload issues that teachers are faced with, and the fact that $2.4 billion is being delayed until 2031 is absolutely disastrous. It's been pointed out before that funding that is delayed is actually funding that is denied. And this money is desperately needed to create better working conditions, better classroom conditions for teachers, better educational outcomes for students. But the government, state government instead, has decided to invest money in locking up and keeping youths in remand. And so the AEU has been organising a series of actions outside the front of multiple different MPs' offices.
As an independent candidate for the 2026 election. I'm running for the eastern region of Victoria. One of my main platforms is fully funding public schools. I'm not a teacher, I'm actually a nurse. So I'm with the nursing union. I'm a big union person. Unions are the best way to make sure you've got the safest workplace that you can get. You said you're campaigning on the full funding being allocated to Victorian schools, is that correct?
Yeah, so fully funding up to the SRS as recommended. At the moment, we're waiting so long, up to 2034, I think it is. That's a whole generation that's going to miss out on that full funding. And that's just going to affect us in the future as well. And I just think it isn't fair that we should be expecting a whole generation to bear the brunt of bad budget management.
A lot of teachers are really concerned about their working conditions.
Well, I think that's all related. When they get the full funding, they will have much better working conditions. At the moment, they're understaffed. There's not enough teachers staying in the profession. And the way that we can do that is to make sure that they have all the tools that they need, all the time that they need, to properly help our students get through their education.
AEU members, teachers, education support employees and school leaders are out the front of Anthony Carbine MP's office because he's part of a government that is completely cut and run from public schools. At the start of the year, the Premier came out with the Prime Minister and said that Victorian public schools would receive full funding, 100% of the schooling resource standard. That's the standard that governments set about the amount of money it takes to deliver a high quality public education to children and young people in our public schools. It was a cause for celebration when that announcement was made. But what the Premier didn't tell us at the time is that they were being duplicitous. Her government had already made a decision back in April 2024 that they wouldn't deliver any additional money arising from the deal with the Commonwealth until 2031. That's outrageous. That's 5 years where schools won't get any additional funding to support the learning and well-being of students. And it means that Victoria is a complete outlier. Every other state and territory has a funding arrangement that will deliver the resources that they need for 100% of school funding. But in Victoria, somehow we're different. But in Victoria, what it means, unless the government reverses what is a $2.4 billion funding cut, what it means is that teachers and ES and school leaders will continue to do 12 and a half hours per week of unpaid overtime, holding up the system, making sure students don't go without, making sure that our students get what they need, but they do it at their own cost. They do it at their family's cost. They do it in an unsustainable way, and they do it in a fashion that means that they are not respected and they're not treated properly by this state government. The answer for Jacinta Allan is pretty simple. Reverse your funding cut, deliver the funding that every other state and territory is delivering to their public schools, and do it now. Our community makes a pretty simple promise to every child and young person, and that is that they are able to attend their local government school and get a high quality public education. But you can't do that if you're not delivering the funding. And you can't do that in a way that doesn't rely on the overwork of teachers and other staff in our schools if you don't respect them and provide them with the support and the pay that they need. And it's also the case that every student is affected when you don't fund our schools properly. Growing up today is harder than it's ever been. Making sure kids get the academic outcomes that we want them to have, that they deserve to have, takes significant resources. Making sure students are able to go well in school and in life and looking after their well-being is absolutely critical. And you need the staffing levels to do that. And of course, we're in the middle of a staffing shortage in Victorian government schools. And the only way to ensure that you attract and retain a workforce is by paying them properly. Victorian government schools, they're the lowest funded in the country. Victorian teachers are the lowest paid. Education support staff are undervalued, and school leaders are as well. And that's a recipe for disaster, and the Premier needs to fix it. When it comes to kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, it's absolutely critical that they get the support. Postcode shouldn't determine how well you're allowed to go in life. That's just simply outrageous. It's not something that anybody in our community should stand for if we believe in equity and if we believe that every child should be able to get excellence in their schooling so that they're ready to go whatever they want to do after that. And at the moment, if you don't have the right level of funding, I can guarantee you that you're not delivering in an equitable way more funding to those schools that have the highest needs kids, whether it's because of socioeconomic circumstances, whether it's because they're migrants, whether it's because there's disability. Whatever the issue is, without additional funding, you can't address it properly, and it's up to the teachers to do all this extra work without any extra pay. Any worker who is doing 12 and a half hours on average every week of unpaid overtime is clocking up a day and a half of unpaid work compared to what the regular hours, what the normal ordinary hours should be. That tells people immediately that there's a massive problem. Workers shouldn't have to do unpaid work to get the job done. And we all know that teachers do get a break during the holiday periods. But if you're working that amount of hours during term time, you're actually not even getting access. You can do the maths. You're not actually even getting access to the 4 weeks annual leave that every worker under the law is entitled to. So from that point of view, teachers are doing a whole bunch of work that you'd expect them to have to do after hours if there's not enough people to do the work during hours. They're doing the lesson preparation, they're doing the assessment of student learning, they're making sure students are getting the support that they might from Allied Health. They're making sure that there's a whole bunch of other connections going on in the community and also in the context of making sure that parents are engaged and know what's going on with their children's learning. We know that these days the complexity of growing up is greater than it ever has been. The world has quickened and certainly the pandemic has added to that. And it's the case now that without additional funding, we are doing a massive disservice. Public school teachers, ES and school leaders in Victoria are campaigning for fair funding, not because we want all this additional extra money. We're actually just asking for what everybody else has already got. It's pretty clear that our democracy relies on public education. It's a cornerstone of our democracy. Whether it's from the point of view of having an educated citizenry, whether it's from the point of view of enabling people to get access to high quality learning so they can be the determinants of their own lives, so that they can get the job that they want to do, so that they can live comfortably economically, so that they can contribute economically to the better and wider good in our community. Public education is the answer to all of those things, and if we undermine it, then we're undermining students in public education. And what we're in effect doing is saying that as a society, somehow we can't muster the effort, we can't muster the resources, we can't muster the political will to deliver what we need to our children and to the next generation.
Listeners, we're now joined by Mark. You're a youth worker. I'm wondering if you had any comments to make about the underfunding of public schools from the perspective of a youth worker.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the industry now for about 15 years, and you see what happens when the industry is underfunded. I work with more 17, 18, 19-year-olds, and you know, if they didn't have the support when they were younger, it's got a flow-on effect, and it's gives work to youth workers, but yeah, I mean, we got to start to look at the solutions from when we're funding the young, our teachers properly, because they're overworked, understaffed, so they can do the best that they can do, you know, so it kind of stops it all from happening down the pointy end.
So as a youth worker, you might have an interesting perspective to offer as well. If, you know, the underfunding of public schooling, does it have disproportionately adverse effects depending on someone's social economic status, like more working class areas or more rural areas?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it creates a starting line different for everybody, you know. When public schools aren't funded properly, like they're already on the back foot. So it makes it really difficult, you know, for the young guys coming through, young students, to be able to, you know, have an equal playing field with everybody else, you know, when all the funding, like, huge amount of funding going to private schools, you know, that they don't have to deal with, like what the public schools are dealing with, so.
Do you have any comments on the importance of public schools themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a really strong place in our community. You know, I've got two young kids myself, and we'll definitely be, you know, we want to send them to a public school because we know that, you know, the teachers at these public schools are great. They just haven't got the funding to do amazing things, and I think we've got to be investing in our future.
We're joined by Michael. Michael, could you introduce yourself a bit to the listeners?
Yeah, I'm Michael and I taught for 35 years in state schools in Victoria and I'm a retired teacher now.
Public schools in Victoria are the least funded in Australia. I'm wondering if you could comment a bit about this. Who's responsible for this? What are the adverse effects that this has for, you know, teachers, for students, for members of the community?
All right, good question. The lack of funding in Victoria's gone on for over a decade. It was started by the Julia Gillard ALP government when they settled on the Gonski Light Agreement. So it wasn't the full amount of funding that Gonski recommended, but it was an agreement made. Unfortunately, it's been over 14 years and neither the Coalition government or the Albanese government has fully funded the Gonski agreement. So Victoria is the lowest per capita funded education system in Australia. Now the Victorian ALP government is also responsible. We've pretty much had an ALP government the whole time, and Andrews and Allan as premiers head governments that have not been able to negotiate a deal with the federal government.
Just this morning, for listeners' reference, it's November 12. We've seen announcements about the Allan government funding toward essentially locking up children as young as 14. We've got all these laws coming through that will essentially allow juvenile offenders to be held on remand. Can you make some comments about the Allan government, State Labor's priorities?
I'd love to. The laws announced today are outrageous, but they're entirely expected. We've been heading this way for years. The lack of funding in state schools has contributed to the so-called youth crime problem. Now, locking up children as young as 14 costs $2.8 million a year. And if only we spent that sort of money in early intervention and prevention. If we funded our schools to 100% of the Gonski money, that would be a good start. In Victoria, our state schools, so primary and secondary state schools, only receive on average 90% of the Gonski funding. That means we're underfunded. Schools can't afford to provide the support to families that need them, and particularly to students in need. And today's law announcements by the Allan government is a predictable result from that lack of funding. The same goes for the health system. Mental health is an issue, it's acknowledged, particularly since COVID, but as a teacher, I've seen this coming for decades. Schools are not funded enough to deal with these students who need help to support them. The state government does have the money, that they're spending enormous amounts of money every year on the Australian Grand Prix. They spend enormous amounts of money on a range of major sports. The Australian Open costs millions and millions. The AFL costs millions. It doesn't go to grassroots sports. What it does, it goes into capital expenditure. For example, they're talking about rebuilding the Shane Warne stand at the MCG. And that's outrageous. That's money that's our taxes that should be spent on our children.
So you are a retired teacher, but still a member of the AEU. What do you think an appropriate union response should be to the lack of funding?
It's really clear that the union needs to lead a proper campaign to get the funding. The approach the current leadership has used hasn't worked. We need to be mobilising and taking industrial action, and that's stop work action, especially in this coming election year. It's the only way the Allan government will listen to teachers. Last agreement, so 3 years ago, the AEU leadership did not run a campaign. What they did was they came to an agreement with the ALP government without even taking one day of stop work action. As a result of that, the agreement was really poor. Teacher wages have fallen in real terms. The conditions have got worse. Young teachers are leaving teaching. They have no intention of staying. This needs to be dealt with by a proper campaign. So Stop Work Action needs to be started soon in the lead up to the election. After the election, the campaign will be nowhere near as effective. So teachers need to be on the streets now.
When governments don't support public schools, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When government doesn't support public schools, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When government doesn't support public schools, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Exciting stuff. Now, let's go to our good news story, our Great State School of the Week. This week's Great State School of the Week is Essendon North Primary School. This is an article by Rachel Power, where she spoke to Principal Kate Barletta and teacher Louise Ryan. Much more than a t-shirt. When students in Essendon North Primary School run onto the oval for PE, they wear something far more meaningful than a sports uniform. Their house t-shirts, alive with colour and design, tell stories of country, culture and connection that have reshaped the school's identity. When the house teams were first introduced at the school in 1935, they were called Faulkner, Henry, Batman and Flinders. "Look how far we've come," exclaims Principal Kate Barletta. In the 1980s, the house names were changed to Earth, Wind, Fire and Water, though in practice more commonly known as Red, Blue, Green, Yellow. Then in 2021, the school contacted the Wurundjeri Council to seek permission to use Woi Wurrung words for Earth, Wind, Fire and Water, and they approved. The houses became Wien, Fire, Gurun, Wind, Bayan, Water, and Biik, Earth. But teacher Louise Ryan notes students still tended to use the shorthand, Red or Blue House, for example. "We wanted to change that," she said. That change came through art. Louise reached out to Narunga Kayurna and Troll Woolway multimedia artist Dane Sansbury-Smith, whose daughter she once taught. With the support of a $20,000 Murrung education grant, he worked with years 1, 2, 4 and 5 to co-design new shirts. Principal Kate Barletta said what could have been a simple design exercise became something much more significant. "We regard Essendon North Primary as very intercultural, where we all strive to be better global citizens, learning about and valuing our diverse and varied cultural backgrounds," says Kate. "We have such a rich community with 48 languages spoken by our students. This project has given us all a common connection to country and to learning together to value, recognise and respect our First Nations people." Louise agrees. "Our school community is very culturally diverse with many new arrivals. Parents have told us it's a great way for them to learn Australia's true history alongside their children." Students sketched their own interpretations of earth, wind, fire and water. From there, Dane integrated these thousands of drawings with his own work to create four powerful designs for the house shirts. The name of his studio, Ajadura, which means "my people's art" in Narungawarra, also appears on the sleeve of each one. "Dane was fundamental," Kate says. "He's such a storyteller. He showed the children why these elements matter to all of us, not just First Nations people. He brought real-life examples from his own country, fire management, seed collection, which made the learning powerful and authentic." Parents requested adult sizes, while students asked for shirts to become their PE uniform. Now they wear them regularly, not just at sports carnivals. They love explaining the stories behind the designs when people ask, Kate says. Essendon North Primary School doesn't have a high proportion of First Nations students, Louise explains. The project came about because of the school's commitment to the department's Murrung Strategy, Delk Wukang Inclusion Plan, and Strengthening Aboriginal Self-Determination Framework. "I think it's important for other school leaders to know that you don't have to have First Nations students to take action on embedding First Nations perspectives in your school, but it's equally important to be able to centre First Nations voices in the action that you do take." The launch event in September 24, featuring a smoking ceremony with Uncle Perry from Wurundjeri Council, MPs, families and staff, marked the project as more than a uniform change. Essendon North has a culture of doing things properly, not in a tokenistic way. This is a core part of who we are and what we do. Our teachers have really upskilled themselves in their understandings, says Louise. But these efforts require persistence and support, and leadership commitment is essential. We had to work really hard for any funding. We ended up paying for quite a bit ourselves, but we knew the worth of the project, says Kate. You can't do it just by ticking a box. It's much more than just having a new uniform. It's about ensuring our community understands and respects our values. The t-shirts are only the beginning. The school's seeking grants to continue the project, with ideas ranging from a picture book that explains the designs to augmented reality artworks where images come alive with sounds and voices. These shirts represent identity, belonging and respect for country, says Kate. Our students have taken on that understanding of why those elements are so important to us as people and to our land. Louise agrees. Students no longer say they're in Red House, they say we in house, and they wear their shirts with pride, and when people ask, they can describe the stories and meanings behind them, and that's the real work of deep listening and recognition. That's all we've got time for this week. If you want to find out more about the dogs, you can go to our website at www.adogs.info. But from all of us here, season's greetings and bye for now.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.